Well, thanks for tuning in. This is Matt Santos with the Mile High Show. We got a good one for you today. We are recording in Chino Valley, which is about 10 miles north of our home base of Prescott, Arizona, and Chino Valley is my hometown. We're sitting down in Arturo's Mexican Restaurant, one of the staples and one of the most popular eateries here in Chino Valley, a great spot for Mexican food. And the reason we chose this restaurant today is because it's home base also to my two guests. We're going to be sitting down with Scott Freitag, who is the chief of both the Chino Valley and Central Yavapai Fire Districts. They cover fire protection and safety for a big, big portion of Yavapai County. And also the leader of our small little town here, Mayor Chris Marley. These two gentlemen, both Chris and Scott, I have gotten to know fairly well working with local media here in our portion of the state. I've had a lot of fun talking with them and interviewing them for various projects. So I figured let's sit down and talk with them today on the mics of the Mile High Show. Chino Valley is one of the smaller communities in our area, about 10,000 folks, but has the unique privilege of covering probably the most ground, the most acreage. We are very spread out, which causes presents challenges in both the servicing of the public, that's Mayor Marley's end of it, and the safety and protection, that is Chief Freitag's end of it. So we're going to talk to these two guys, learn a little bit about their history. We're going to learn a little bit about their challenges, find out their goals, where they want to take their various various departments and folks that they have under them, what they want those folks to accomplish, and how they're going to go about doing it. They have both personal, interesting personal stories and quite warped senses of humor. So hopefully some of that will shine through as we talk. And again, we are talking at Arturo's Mexican Restaurant. I'll have a link to their location. And when you come in, which I hope you do, let them know you're coming in at the request of the Mile High Show. And maybe I can sneak some free food out of that plug. So we will see. But in the meantime, enjoy this conversation with Scott Freitag and Mayor Chris Marley. Thanks for tuning in.
Something about me aggravates people. I can't figure it.
Well, you seem so laid back.
Yeah, and you entered into the perfect line of work, public service, to really tick people off. Let's kick it off. Go ahead, Scott. Thanks for sitting down with us. You are the head, the leader of two of the larger organizations in this area, the Central Yavapai and Chino Valley Fire Districts. So it is nice to see you separate from your duties to spend some time, literally kick off your shoes and relax.
And I have. I walked out of the house in a pair of flip-flops and a T-shirt, a pair of jeans. My wife said, "Are you sure this is okay?" I said, "Absolutely." Yeah.
Now, when we were kids, we used to call those thongs, but that's a whole different outfit now.
That's
so we won't go.
Thing now. I had to rethink what I was saying.
Flip flops, much more appropriate. Chris, thanks for sitting down. You are in your normal, relaxed mode of Hawaiian print shirt.
I'm glad that Scott wore his flip-flops. I don't feel ashamed of my toga.
See, and I love his Hawaiian shirts. When you were talking about theme music, I kept going to Jimmy Buffett.
Little Jimmy Buffett. We blow
so
out
when
your
he said
flip-flop.
Molly Hatchet, I was surprised.
I like Jim pretty much everything from Jimmy Buffett to Jimi Hendrix, so... yeah, I enjoy it all.
Very nice.
One of the reasons I wanted to sit down with you guys together, other than the fact that I enjoy talking with you guys, I've had you both on radio several times each, and then whenever we're seeing each other at meetings and stuff, it's always obviously enjoyable to talk with you guys. But you both kind of have a warped sense of humor.
We encourage
that to come through.
I'm the straight man of the two.
whatever.
But above all, in both of your organizations that you work with and that you guide, you face some of the same issues, the same problems, that being we've got a large landmass, Chino Valley, and you, Scott, dealing with the entire county, basically, or a good chunk of the county. We've got a lot of land, a lot of folks that come from really diverse backgrounds.
Yeah.
And trying to serve the greater good and make everybody happy, obviously that doesn't happen.
No.
I mean, that's any organization. You're never going to make everybody happy. But to try and do what's best for the majority, you're going to tick a few people off. You're going to have some people that aren't happy with what you're doing. And you guys both do that on a day-to-day basis, and both of you struggle, like most small communities, with a really small and dwindling budget. So those challenges common challenges are really why I wanted to talk with you. But before we get into that, I've learned about both of you in my conversations with you. But let's just go, Chris, give us a little bio. Give us a little bit about you personally before you came to Chino, before you came to this area. Where are you from? What's your background, your personal background?
I was born down in Phoenix, went to high school down there, went to Washington, barely graduated. It was all I could do. I really was not into school, and so went into the Navy after that, I became a machinist mate, learned the air conditioning and refrigeration business, got out and became an industrial refrigeration mechanic, and I just loved it. And probably about age 32, I was called into the ministry. I stayed working as an air conditioning mechanic and then served as a minister on the weekends, and did 30 years over there in the White Mountains, over on the eastern side of the state, and moved to Prescott. I was asked to come to Prescott, take an early retirement from the power company, and come to Prescott as a full-time pastor. And I was there for probably 7 years and then moved to Chino. And I thought I was just going to raise a garden and grandkids, and the local public officials sort of made me mad, so I ended up getting involved in the political
scene. And now you're on the other end of that, making
now
them people
I'm
mad.
I'm making other people mad. I even make Scott mad, and you can't make Scott mad.
Now, in our conversations before, you spent some time as a youngster out of country.
Right, right.
Where? What was that? Where?
I lived 5 years in Guatemala, and then 1 year in El Salvador.
At what age?
I was 6 months old when my family moved to Guatemala, and so I learned to speak Spanish before English.
But you claim to be born in the U.S. Do we got any proof of that?
Yeah,
Have we seen that birth certificate?
Matter of fact, I've had several of my constituents that they claim they're going to ask at council meeting that the mayor needs to produce a birth certificate. So,
so yours is your birth certificate was not kept in the same place as President Obama's.
No, sir. Actually, mine is freshly Xeroxed. It's
Jeez. Scott, what's your history? You have been here for
about 20 months.
Okay, so just under 2 years. I remember coming in when you were signing your contract, and I think that's the first time I met you.
Yes, it was.
And you were coming in from where?
I was coming in from St. Louis. I was born and raised in St. Louis. Lived there my entire life, with the exception of a short time in the United States Air Force. Got out of the Air Force and was kind of lost, wandering. Met my wife. Got married, had a baby, had no plans and no future, which was brilliant. Mm-hmm. Had to figure something out, so I used my GI Bill and went to EMT school.
It seems like the next step should have been mayor, with no plans, no education.
I was thinking president.
Yes, sure will, Steve. Good deal.
So, you know, I took a look at it.
Is this your fan base? You get autographs, handing out autographs?
I think it's the fan base. Now, actually, I think we're supposed to be in his fan base because he's the musician.
Yeah, we're going to sit down with Steve and talk with him soon. That's a whole other podcast. I thought it was just somebody to get a closer look at those toes.
Yeah, well, they are sexy toes, I got to say.
Foot fetish.
So, you know, I went to EMT school, got hired on at a private ambulance service in the city of St. Louis as an emergency medical dispatcher. Worked my way through paramedic school, got on an ambulance, and then eventually got hired by St. Charles City Fire Department. Spent just shy of 10 years, right at 10 years there. Took a position as the assistant chief of operations for a neighboring fire district. During that time, I continued my education that I had kind of pushed off. Not unlike Chris, my high school years were probably sometimes better left forgotten. Maybe not some of the best choices.
Make a note of that. We're going to get back to that. We're going to circle back around to that one.
We were both innocent. We don't recollect anything of those years.
Then we all have something in common because there's much of my high school years I don't recall either.
Probably for a whole different reason, maybe the same.
I don't know.
Someone asked me recently, they said, are you going to get into politics at some point? I said, I don't know. That could be a problem. They tend to find the skeletons in your closet.
You just got to keep remembering the phrase, I do not recall.
Yeah, I do not recall. And fortunately, they didn't have Facebook or camera phones then.
There you go.
Back in those days. So, yeah, I went through, ultimately went back to college, started in the community college, got my associate degree. Went on to the university in St. Charles, Missouri, Lindenwood University. Got my undergraduate in mass communications, then continued on for my master's in business administration. At the same time, I went back, when I completed my graduate degree, I went back to the National Fire Academy. I got accepted to a four-year program called the Executive Fire Officer Program. It's 4 years of graduate-level studies. Completed that. Went back to Lindenwood University to teach as a part adjunct professor. And then, you know, I was looking for some opportunities outside of St. Louis. I don't know if you've been there. St. Louis Cardinals are obviously the best baseball team in the world, but the weather is horrible.
All right.
And it's hot, it's humid, there's bugs, there's plants that give you rashes, and Arizona seemed like a nice spot. Now, they did promise me 364 days a year of sunshine. They failed to mention the wind, the monsoon.
Well, that's why we have so much
sunshine.
Snow. The wind blows all the clouds away.
Yeah.
So.
Right.
So you know, it was a good opportunity to come here, and I've had wonderful chances to meet some great people and expand on what I came here for.
Now, part of your education was, you said, mass communications. Obviously, the business studies that you did. What was the degree?
Master's in Business Administration.
MBA. That comes in a lot of play with your administrative duties as a fire chief. A lot of people probably wouldn't realize where the mass communication comes in. Did you serve as a PIO, public information officer, for your fire department there?
I did. I spent, I think it was around 15 years working with the St. Louis media for the fire department and then the fire district. Very good working relationship with those folks, and really enjoyed the opportunity to get out in front of people and speak. Quite honestly, and it's kind of a circuitous route, but I went in the Air Force thinking that I was going to go into their public relations field. That's what I signed up for.
Yeah.
And I was going to get my GI Bill and come out and go to school for public relations.
Cool.
When I got into basic training, and Chris, I'm not sure if you had this same type of experience, they said, you need to pick a job. I said, well, I already did. I'm going to be in PR. And they said, oh, yeah, we forgot to tell you that you already had to have a two-year degree for that, so spin again. but yet, you know, here I am.
Now, that's an aspect that I'm familiar with, the PIOs. I've worked with many locally and in other areas over the years. A lot of folks don't realize how important that is, and that's a challenge that, Chris, I'm sure you face as well with working with the town, of getting correct information out to the public, dealing with your organization, your town, your department in a timely manner, and making sure that information's correct. I'm sure and this week when we're recording this, there's a lot of activity going on in Baltimore for various reasons, and those PIOs from fire and police and from the city are running ragged trying to contain information and distribute it correctly. Missouri recently in Ferguson had similar problems. Why is that so important from your end as a former PIO, and you're involved in that role somewhat now because being sometimes the face of your department? Why is it so important to have, and I don't want to use the term control because that brings in a whole propaganda kind, but that's kind of what it is. How important is it to control and moderate the information coming out of a large department like a fire department?
Well, you know, and I think Chris will back me up on this. You know, not very many people come out to our public meetings, but a lot of people are willing to comment in blogs and in editorial writings.
Yeah.
And it's important for us to be able to communicate with the public the facts around any given situation, whether it's the challenges that the town of Chino Valley faces, the information with the bond,
you bet,
from the bond election, whether it's the layoffs at the Chino Valley Fire District, the relationship and where we're going between Chino Valley and Central Yavapai Fire. You know, the information has got to be timely, and it has to be accurate, because if it's not, now you're behind the eight ball.
And now you're dealing with the rumor mill.
Right.
We have some of that here in Chino.
What? There is a rumor mill. I'm not real sure where it's at.
That's one industry that's thriving in this struggling economy is the rumor mill business.
Yeah.
You mentioned in jest about when you were growing up, when you were in school, no Facebook, and obviously Facebook and social media in general is unfortunately where a lot of people get their news.
Yes.
And dealing with that now and trying to maintain accurate information, I know it's a challenge. I help out some with the town in keeping that information out there, because if you as a department don't provide information, or you as a town don't provide information, the public's going to provide it anyway.
And
it's whether or not it's good, whether or not it's accurate, or whether it's not in the best interest of the entity. You're smiling, Scott. Go ahead. Jump in.
What? No, go ahead.
This is killing me. I have got to tell you this, Matt. We had a lady after a town council meeting. She told me, and I kid thee not, this is absolutely true, and hopefully she's listening to the podcast because she'll laugh. She told me, she said, "Mayor, I need the facts. Now, if I can't have the facts, I'll just make some up." And I kid thee not, she told me that. And I thought, wow, that is, it's refreshingly honest.
Yeah.
To have folks tell you, if I don't have the facts, I'm going to make them up. So you need to get me some facts.
All right, we're
going to
get some facts here real quick. And the reason I just reached for my phone, I'm not ignoring you guys. I got this text from my sister today, and it had to do with the mayor.
I was innocent. The pictures were fake.
Well, this is, you're going to get a kick out of this. She goes, "You might know this. How much does the mayor of Chino Valley make?" So I don't know why she's asking me this, because it's my sister. She's, you know.
Does she live here?
She lives in Paulden. She was in Chino getting her hair done. That's the problem I don't have, but my sister gets. She has hair, and she doesn't listen to this at all. So I'll tell you right off the bat, most of it's gray.
Yeah, yeah.
She is my much older sister,
and your hair is done. It's gone.
It's shiny. It's clear. Shiny. It's clear.
That's why we're in the back corner.
No, I like to tell people I don't shave my head. I just pluck the grays, and this is what I'm left with. And I'm probably wrong here, but this was the text I gave her back. You can correct me in here. I texted her back. I'm meeting with him tonight. Mm-hmm. I think it's either $125, $130 a month, about $2,000 a year or under $2,000 a year. And then I followed that up with, all elected positions here are pretty much voluntary.
They really are.
And this was her response. And I didn't know where she was. Yeah. She's getting her hair done. Mm-hmm. And Audrey, the gal that owns the, is a friend of ours as well. She's Sheer Styles. Plug. Mm-hmm. Sheer Styles here in Chino Valley, a place to get your hair done. She's a client of Audrey's told her he makes $1 million a year.
Congratulations.
Wow. I am styling.
That is amazing.
So while Sheer Styles here in Chino Valley may be a great place to get your hair done, I would not suggest going there for your news.
Yeah, for your facts. Actually, honest to goodness, it's $2,400 a year. And so I get paid $200 a month after taxes. It's, I think, $174. Which that barely pays for all the Tums that I eat during the month.
Now, all joking aside, estimate, how many hours a week do you spend on town business? Because it is not a full-time position. That's not how our town here in Chino Valley is set up.
Right. That's correct. It's not designed to be a full-time position. There are weeks when it's probably around 40, between 40 and 60 hours. It much depends on the drama level.
Lately 80 hours? Is that about where we're at?
There's times when it amps up to 40, 60, 80 hours. Yeah. Honest to goodness, a town this size, if things are, if things are ginning along okay, the mayor should be able to do the job in probably 6 or 8 hours a week. You come in, you sign some documents, you attend a few ribbon cuttings, attend a few events.
Yeah.
But if there's a catastrophe going on, or if there's something that's real high profile, like the bond issue.
Right.
With the bond issue, I was always, as Scott said, accurate, timely information is huge. To be able to get all the numbers together, I have to check probably 3-4 different sources to verify that all my numbers are right before I print them. There's a lot of folks that just pick a number out of the air and they type it in.
Like $1 million.
Yeah, like $1 million. And for myself, if I'm going to put it in print, I have to make sure it's accurate.
Yeah. No, boil it down a little bit. You got here in Chino, and we'll just use this. We're pretty similar to small towns around the country. We're 10,000 folks living within our town limits proper, but we service how? And you may know, you may not. Acreage? Or how many square miles?
Because I think we are at 26 square miles. I've got the number.
That's
back
just
the house.
In town, but in the town zip code. There's extended out that are part of the county where I live. I happen to live west of Reed Road, so I'm not in town proper.
Traitor.
But we, you build a house in town limits, I'll move
in. I live in town.
Okay. Yeah.
I'm the only one that does it. You hear that, hon? We got to move. We got to move, or the mayor's going to not let me at meetings anymore.
There was a deathly silence.
I know. What are you going to say?
No fire trucks will roll, and I won't make any laws that will help you.
But the decisions the decisions council makes, they affect not just those 10,000, but several more thousand that live, like where I do, in the adjacent communities, and obviously the ones that travel through the tens of thousands of vehicles that travel up and down our highway. Mm-hmm. So the decisions you make affect a lot of people, just like small towns on highways around the country.
You bet.
We happen to meet town council meetings twice a month, the second and fourth Tuesday. On off weeks, you often have study sessions. So you're looking at a 2 to 4 hour council meeting twice a month, another 2 to 3 hour study sessions. The meetings you got to have with department heads, times you got to sit down with the press, to do things, and then your chamber activities and stuff. So that $2,000 a month can boil down to pennies an hour.
$200.
I mean, $200 a month. $2,000 a year, $2,400 a year.
Yeah.
But $200 a month spread out over all those hours is pennies yeah. on the. So okay, so that brings out the question: why?
Why? I ask myself a lot. Oh, the same question. What's ironic is, as an electrician, I can make $20 an hour doing pump work, plumbing type work, probably $16-18 an hour. If I'm doing instrumentation work, it's huge. The wages are huge for doing programmable logic controllers, motor control stations, those kind of things.
I don't even know what you just said.
Oh, okay.
No, that's just because I'm an idiot.
There's various outfits that I work for, setting up water systems for them, control systems, fire systems, that kind of stuff, and the wages are a lot better than that of being mayor.
Yeah.
But I'm doing this basically to hopefully preserve some freedoms for some folks, help the town get right side up in its finances, and. Whenever we get to that point where our finances are right side up and we're making money, I'll gladly step out and let somebody who likes parades take the job.
Yeah. Wearing funny hats and waving at crowds.
Because I do. I enjoy walking into a job site where I was in one about 2 months ago. Their whole fire system was down. Their backup emergency generator was down. And I went in and I troubleshot the system, got them back up to speed, did a bunch of repairs. I enjoy that kind of stuff. I enjoy at the end of the day being able to look back and say I did some good. But in the government, it's sometimes 2-3 years before you ever see a tangible result of
you're doing in meetings and study sessions.
Right.
Can be long after your term is up, even.
You bet.
And some of that is what, you know, without throwing too much salt on the wound, I mean, you're dealing with cleaning up things that happened 2 and 3 administrations ago.
Right. Cleaning up some things and reaping some rewards. Our rifle range out here, all of that took place before I ever got into office. But there's a few things that previous councils set in motion that we're having to deal with now. You know, that's no secret.
Yeah. But put this out to both of you. Biggest challenges you guys face individually with your duties.
Well, you know, I'm going to build off of what Chris said. You know, we have to think about when we make a decision, it's like kicking that first domino over. And the question that we have to ask ourselves is, when I kick this first domino over, where's that last one going to fall? Mm-hmm. And neither one of us have a crystal ball. Now, I will say, I tried to buy a Magic 8 Ball at Alco as it was going out of business, and all three of them were broken.
They were all broken. Yeah.
And so one of my assistant chiefs got me a Magic Pin, mm-hmm. an answer pin. So we've been trying to implement that. But with all of that, I still don't know exactly when I make a decision where that last one's going to fall. Because our goal is, how do we make decisions and leave behind something that is sustainable and successful for the long term? Because we're finite within these organizations, whether it's the town or the fire districts. We're finite. But the town and the districts are infinite. And we have to make decisions understanding that. What's the long term? And sometimes those decisions, people don't like them.
Yeah.
They're not happy about it. I know Chris has taken a lot of flack on things in the town. I haven't taken as much on things in the fire district. But I have taken a lot of flack for my stance in supporting the town.
Yeah.
You know, and it's it's some of it's just unreasonable in the things that they're saying, and that is what it is. I knew that when I stepped up.
But and let me jump in real quick, because your district is what it is. It's a district. It's not a fire department.
Correct.
It's not a department of the town. That's kind of a foreign thing for me. Where I used to live, we were suburbs of a metro area, and it was town, city ran. Fire, police, everything else. You are not. Talk a little bit about that difference. The difference between you as a separate entity.
Well, you know, if you look at a fire department is part of a municipality. So, if the town of Chino Valley had a fire department, they would have the Chino Valley Fire Department.
Yeah.
And just like Prescott Fire Department is part of the city, the Chino Valley Fire District, Central Yavapai Fire District. We are separate governmental agencies. In the state of Arizona, we're formed under Title 48, Chapter 5 of the Arizona State Statutes. And so we're a separate governmental agency. We have separate budgets. We have separate revenue source. I say source as opposed to sources because we're limited on that source. And thank you. So it's sometimes it's a difficult differentiation. And I know with... you know, when I was supporting the bond, some folks had difficulty in separating the fact that I, as the fire chief and as a town resident, I have the freedom to speak and support.
That's why I wanted to bring that up, because that sometimes town employees and especially elected officials, your hands are tied because you're not legally, you're not allowed to campaign for things, especially at meetings and things. Whatever side of the fence you're on, and you guys, Scott, you and your crew were getting a little flack because people didn't always realize or didn't, quite frankly, care that you're not actually town employees. And
I think the don't care part of it is the key. They wanted to perpetuate a narrative that we were violating the law, even though when presented with the facts... and shown, no, we have the ability to do this. They said, yep, we see that. And then they would turn around and tell somebody we're in violation of the law that we just showed them we're not. They wrote letters to the editor. They filed false complaints against us with the county. And the county did an investigation, came back and said, absolutely not. You guys were not the problem. But they continue to put that narrative out there. And it's very unfortunate. You know, and it's gotten to the point now where, you know, one gentleman in particular has followed our battalion chief and accosted him in a parking lot.
Chris got so mad on this whole thing, he threw ice at me. Okay, we don't want to rehash. This isn't the Jerry Springer show, but talk a little bit about that.
Just in brief, you know, people are up. There's a few that are upset, and so they've chosen the fire district as a target. And you know what? We're going to rise above that because we think the town of Chino Valley has a lot of potential for the future. Many of our folks live in the town of Chino Valley, and we are going to remain part of this community. And being part of the community means having a voice.
Yeah. Now, go ahead.
We're going to continue to have that voice, and we're going to continue to work in partnership with the town. And I'll tell you this. This is a rule I go by, and I gave all of my personnel at Chino and Central this.
Uh-huh.
I said I go by the rule of threes. Every day, 33% of you are going to be happy with me. 33% aren't going to care. And 33% are simply going to be pissed off.
Yeah. Yeah.
And every day, the people in each of those categories is going to switch which category they're in.
Yeah.
And the way I look at it, and Chris, you being the politician, being the mayor, if you have 33% of the people happy with you and 33% that don't care, that's 66% approval rating.
Yeah,
that's a landslide.
I'm looking even at an even bleaker landscape. I'm saying I've got Matt and Scott. All I need is four more people. I'll have enough for pallbearers.
How heavy is that urn?
You can
because you're going to be burned in effigy at some point.
Right? Yeah.
Now, some. some folks have come up with alternate plans, suggestions, so to speak. Some, I'm sure, have very, very good motives in trying to help out and trying to save the town, save the district some money. And some, as you mentioned, are just looking for a finger to point at, somebody to take the blame, and just some are just wanting to vent and blow some steam. What are some of the suggestions? What are some of the solutions that people have presented out there to help the finances that the fire district is facing, and talk about why those are or are not viable solutions?
Well, the first one I'd touch on is, and I took it as a compliment. Some of my personnel were very offended by a blog post that said that to save money, they should get rid of me. It's not that I'm doing a bad job, but that my qualifications require a salary that's simply too high to be in this area. And, you know, when some of my guys called me and said, that upsets us, I said, look, don't worry about it. I took it as a compliment. He didn't say what I'm doing is wrong.
Yeah.
He just said my qualifications he thought fit a bigger agency. But, you know, the reality is we have a very professional, highly trained, highly skilled, highly educated workforce in the Chino Valley Fire District. A lot of folks don't realize that. Yeah. So I am not above the Chino Valley Fire District. I fit in with the Chino Valley Fire District. Some of the others were, hey, get rid of the fire department, go back to volunteers, have Chino Valley, have Chris, have the police department start running all the EMS calls, send their people to paramedic school. I believe the mayor was on that list as well as to go to paramedic school.
You bet.
And now what they forget
the
is that...
chances of him giving me mouth-to-mouth. No thanks.
We cover more than the town of Chino Valley. So you're talking... Now the sheriff's department has to get involved. So Chief Wynn wrote a very nice letter to our board expressing...
Chief Wynn of the Chino Valley Police Department.
Chino Valley Police, with his concerns about the recommendation and how it wouldn't be feasible. I contacted Sheriff Masher, who expressed the same concerns. There's no way he could do it. And, you know, and I called the local ambulance company and said, hey, what if we didn't run EMS calls anymore? And
they said, Lifeline, which is the primary one out this way.
Right, Lifeline. They said, you're not really thinking of doing that, are you? Because that's not going to work. So, you know, we've had some that are far out there, some that, you know, people simply don't have the information, they don't have all the facts. So they've made some decent recommendations. We've assessed those throughout this process, and we're happy to explain and talk to anybody about what we've done. But, you know, I have to say, though, I greatly appreciate the working relationship with the town and with Chris and with Robert Smith, the town manager, and Chief Wynn. You know, the ability for us to sit down and communicate just... Not just in this environment, but any environment. You know, they get it. They understand. They've had to make tough decisions. And we support each other.
Yeah. The fire districts, fire departments in metro areas, in densely populated areas, face, I'm sure, some challenges you guys don't. Calls that are unique to them that you don't. But we have a kind of a weird area here because we have the town proper, and then for central Yavapai, you've got Prescott Valley and you know, suburb-type areas. But then we cover some, you know, like you got Paulden. You got the kind of the outskirts of areas. What are some things that, some challenges, some duties, some kind of unique call situations that you guys face that other departments, districts won't necessarily face?
You know, coming out of Missouri, it's interesting, and a lot of people move here from California. Uh-huh. And Arizona is very much about property rights. People don't want to be forced into fire districts. So there's a lot of areas out here that aren't in fire districts, and they don't have fire protection unless they have a contract. And some of these people say, I don't want a contract. You should just provide service, which we can't do. You know, so we will end up having a fire, and there's a population that moves through Paulden that rents homes, so forth and so on, and they're not being told that they don't have fire protection. So we get a call for a fire. They don't have a contract. We don't respond unless there's a threat to life.
Yeah.
Or to protect a house next door that does have a contract. That's a, you know, that's a challenge. Now, again, coming out of the St. Louis area, there's a lot of horses and free-range chickens right. and things that I'm not used to. So we have a number of, you know, equestrian-related injuries. Being a long way from a trauma center, we have to fly a lot of people. Those things are different. But as far as fire and medical calls and motor vehicle crashes, other than long transport times or utilizing a helicopter a lot, it's, you know, it's similar.
Yeah.
And working with people's expectations.
Now, that out-of-district information, I got a quick education in that moving out here from a larger metro area, and we moved out to Paulden. That was one of the first things our realtor told us was, even though there's a station right around the corner, which it was fairly close by that Paulden station, we weren't in district. That was a foreign concept to me. I just didn't understand it. But it was, you know, and this was 10 years ago. I think our contract was about $200 a year. It was virtually nothing.
Right.
You know, and I'm not to say that I got $200 a year to throw around, but in relation to what it was protecting and what we gained out of it, and it was clearly explained to me. Now, in the course of my work with local media, we had a couple of fires that seemed to be back-to-back. Two of them actually dealt with the same family.
Yeah.
And I dealt with these folks. I interviewed these folks. Yeah. And they knew they were out of district.
Yeah.
And they kind of gambled, unfortunately.
Yeah. Yeah.
Working with the media, we would put that out there a lot. I know the district at the time, this was your predecessor, was handling some of this. And they would go out and they did community public meetings and open houses and stuff.
It
frustrated me watching this going, well, you don't understand. You moved out here. And I asked one guy specifically, I said, you know, he was complaining about, well, I live, you know, 3 miles from the station. They better come to my house. I asked him, I said, do you have a contract? He goes, no, and I won't get one. I said, where did you move from? He goes, I've never lived in an area that would... I said, where'd you live from? It's Southern Cal.
Yeah.
I said, you lived in the L.A. area. Why'd you move out here? Well, I wanted to get away from it all. I go, well, all is fire protection. Yeah.
You got these away
the,
from it all.
These are the same folks that are complaining that their roads aren't paved. Well, you moved to the middle of nowhere from a densely populated urban area, right. And you're worried that you're lowered, you know... Corolla is scraping on the dirt. Well, you know, it doesn't make any sense.
You know, it's funny. I spoke to a lady recently because we had a another out-of-district fire. And she was from Texas.
Oh.
And someone questioned her about her property taxes. She said, well, in Texas, they were 10 times higher than anything we'd pay out here.
Yeah.
Okay. And she asked about her education efforts. And I told her what we had done. We had put up signs. They had been stolen. We had done town meetings, and people moved. And we had given out pamphlets. We tried to go door to door. We got chased away from some of the homes by people with guns on the porch.
It's true.
I said, we've done articles in the paper. Well, people out here don't get papers. It's been on the internet. We've done things on our website.
On the radio, everywhere.
People don't have the internet. We've done radio. People don't have radios. We've done TV. People don't have TVs. I'm like, I don't know what more you want me to do. We could try to rent a helicopter, an airplane, and do an information drop.
Yeah.
But
it sounds like they got
littering.
Nothing to burn down if they don't have radio, TV, internet, or what are they protecting?
I don't know. We try. We even did pamphlets in bilingual. So we had them translated into Spanish and tried to get them out through the schools. But... you know, in the state of Arizona, there's no requirement on the disclosure statement for the realtors that they have to say this home is out of district, and there's no requirement for the homeowner who's renting their property, so the landlord, to disclose that this property's not in district and that they can, as renters, get a contract.
Yeah.
Well, we'll make sure both of our listeners know about this.
I think that's perfect. We got a wide audience.
I'm hoping both of them are listening. So.
No. Hey, they've come out to your town council meeting, Chris, when you were talking about a what were you going to do? It was a resolution, or the town, as the town council, you were going to come out against legalization of recreational marijuana, and you had a number of folks from the Paulden area come in and speak to the town council and express concerns.
I thought those were palm leaves on your shirt.
We did have some folks from...
I didn't look close enough. I thought those were palm leaves.
These
I missed...
are palm leaves.
Oh, okay.
And the name Marley doesn't have anything to do with it.
No, that's what we're going to put on the intro. I know what we're going
to put. I like it. That's perfect.
Oh, man.
Well, you know, Lee Paul came out last night and talked about that.
All right. There you go. I wanted to regress for just one moment. Scott, and it blesses me that you're humble about the work that you do. I gotta be serious about something for one moment. When we hire a battalion fire chief or a town manager, when we hire somebody that's a professional to run an operation, we're not hiring them for their day-to-day operation. We're hiring them for their ability to see beyond the situation, as you said about the dominoes.
Right.
How many dominoes will this knock over? How will this affect future generations? How can this be sustainable? Can this be sustainable? We're hiring a level of expertise. If Chino Valley was running smoothly, absolutely smoothly, all of our debts were paid, all of our we had a good job base, we had plenty of income, our streets were all paved, anyone could do the job of town manager, anyone could do the job of mayor, anyone could be in charge of our fire district if everything was perfect. But we're in a situation where not everything is perfect. And as I told one individual, they said, well, we're paying too much for such and such employee. And I said, answer me honestly. Would you go to Harbor Freight Salvage for a pacemaker? Would you go to Harbor Freight Salvage for a parachute? There's certain things in life where you say, you know what, it's worth the cost. Mm-hmm. If my granddaughter had a brain aneurysm, I wouldn't get low bidder. I just wouldn't.
Right.
You know? It's important to me that I get the best for that type of situation. If I'm buying just a regular pair of pliers to take and twist tie wire with, I can go down to Harbor Freight Salvage and I'll buy just a regular old 98-cent cast pair of pliers. If I want just a tack hammer for hanging pictures on the wall, I'll pay a buck and a half in the tool bin at any hardware store. But if I'm getting a precision instrument that's going to be doing precision work, I want the best, okay? As a machinist, mm-hmm. I use Sterrett. I use Mitutoyo if I've got for certain applications. But I use the best tooling that I can, the best measuring instruments that I can, because it's important to me that the end product is perfect, okay?
Right.
But just for a regular old sledgehammer, I'll pay $2, buy it out of the parts bin. The same way goes with our district fire chief, with our town manager. I want, because of the fallout of something going wrong, I want somebody that's the best. So anyway, Scott's been real humble about this, but I wanted to let folks know we could get a... We could, what's your official title?
Fire chief.
Okay, we could get a fire chief for probably $29,000 a year, I would imagine. I mean, if we advertised in the paper, we could get a fire chief for $29,000
a year.
But we would get a $29,000 a year fire chief.
Yeah.
And when things really turned sour, I mean really turned sour, he'd throw his keys on the desk and he'd walk. Or he'd make a decision that would cost a lot of lives. It's huge that we have folks that are capable of dealing with that. So,
right.
Anyway, I just to me, that's a pet peeve with me,
yeah.
folks. When I was in the refrigeration business, I'd do a call on at a power plant or a big commercial establishment. And they'd say, oh, wow, that's all you did? And we're paying you X number of dollars? I'd say, well, you know what? You can hire a guy a lot cheaper and have him here for 30 hours and blow up a lot of stuff. Yep. Or you can hire me to walk in, fix it, and leave. So anyway, that's I shouldn't have gone on too
much. No, that's exactly right. And then
I appreciate that.
Refrigeration, you know, July in Phoenix, they're going to be second-guessing why they got the guy out of Craigslist or on the bulletin board at the laundromat is opposed to getting the guy that came highly recommended. This whole thing came up just last night at the council meeting.
You bet.
And it comes up anytime budgets are discussed. There was an item dealing with, I forget what exactly it was called, but it was dealing with the budget that the police department is working under. Mm-hmm. And the subject of the bulletproof vest came up. And it was a question. It was a very valid question. Well, you replace these every 5 years. Why? And the officer there said, well, that's the limit that the manufacturer will warranty you for.
Right. Right.
So when they say, we don't know if it's going to work after such and such a years, I want a new one.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And I leaned over to, I think it was Ruth that was sitting next to me. I said, I want a new one every year. So, you know, there's certain things. Like you said, qualified individuals,
yep.
the people that are going to be taking the reins in the event of a disaster, man-made or natural, and there's certain things you want to pay top dollar for when somebody's pointing a .38 at you.
A bulletproof vest is a perfect example. You could probably get a bulletproof vest at a discount supply store,
right?
But honest to goodness, when that round penetrates and takes that officer's life, are you willing to pay the lawsuit and deal with the fallout that comes from that?
And that without sounding cold, mm-hmm. but that comes into play.
It does.
Do we want a shortcut on the training for our firefighters as far as first aid, extraction for accidents? I'm an idiot when it comes to this stuff, but I've sat in some of the fire board meetings when they've analyzed the fire and they talk about the way it transfers and the best way to get into a building and minimize damage and things. That's ongoing training. Same thing with our police department in maintaining their vehicles, their bikes. That came up last night.
Yeah,
that came up. And without trying to sound cold about it, but in reality is, well, okay, do we pay for it now or do we pay for it after our lack of training or our broken machinery causes some guy out in the public to suffer, you know, to die, and then it gets turned on its head and go, well, he died because firefighter so-and-so didn't know what he was doing.
Yeah.
The thing about the motorcycles I found interesting. I got a buddy of mine over in the White Mountains that's been a quadriplegic for probably 12, 14 years now because his front tire went away on his motorcycle, and when it did, everything comes from together at a high rate of speed.
Right.
We need our police officers to have their equipment in top shape. We need them to be wearing protective equipment. Same with our firefighters. Mm-hmm. We need them to be wearing protective. There's some things that we cannot skimp on, okay? There's other things that we can, and I'm all for cost savings. But to me, the wisdom comes with your work as a battalion fire chief. You look and you say, we can skimp on this, but we cannot skimp on this.
Right.
That's huge. John Q. Public, he looks and he says, why do these guys need a brand new bulletproof vest every 5 years? I was really pleased with the answer that came back. Number one, the manufacturer won't warranty it past five. I found out subsequently from a former motor police officer, he said the sweat, the sunlight, the wear and tear deteriorates those.
Yes, it does.
And he said I wish that officer had brought up the deterioration. But what he brought up was enough, that 5 years is all the manufacturer warranty.
You know, it's interesting, Chris, because we have the same issue with the turnout gear that our firefighters wear. They've come back and said that is only good for 10 years if it passes certain stringent standards. And really, if you want to get the life out of it, because you're talking $2,000 to $2,500 for a set of gear, you want to keep it in frontline service for 5 years and then put it in reserve service for 5 years.
Right.
Get your 10 years out of it for two reasons. One, UV rays. Same thing with the flak jackets. You have the same problem with turnout gear. It degrades. And if you think about it, when you wear your turnout gear and you go into a fire situation, you're getting carcinogens soaked into that material. And you have to wash it. Well, if you don't have a backup set of gear, you don't have anything to wear, which means you have to continue wearing that gear soaked in carcinogen. It gets into your skin. It permeates. Later in life, you end up with issues, the workers' comp issues, so forth and so on. The other side of that is you have to put it in what's called an extractor. Well, think about this is an industrialized machine that's designed to try to pull all of those contaminants out.
Wow.
But
wow.
Think about just a pair of jeans. You go to the store, you spend $50, $60 on a pair of jeans. I try to go to Kohl's when they're on sale for like $20, $25 bucks.
Yeah. Add them to the list of sponsors. Yeah. Kohl's.
Kohl's.
Yes. I think we lost the boat on Harbor Freight. They're never going to.
Harbor Freight.
Harbor Freight may not be there. But if you put a pair of jeans and you buy them, look at them 5 years from now, after you've worn them, after they've been through the wash. What's the material like? What's the integrity of that material?
Right.
It's lessened. Well, it's no different with the material that fire gear is made out of. When you send it through that extractor and it's had oils, it's had people vomit on you, blood, other odd things. Yep. And then just being in a fire, you can see where the 10-year limit, if it makes it that far, is all you get. Well, that's a huge expense to fire districts or fire service agencies, but just like the police department. With the bulletproof vest. Now, I was going to ask last night, though, because they were asking, well, what do you do with bulletproof vests when they retire out after 5 years? I'm like, well, could I get one of those just to wear during budget time?
Yeah. Councilman Turner suggested I get one that's way out of service.
Maybe we can convert them to a pair of boxers for you for budget time. Now, I don't know, and I'm going to have to ask Vince, the PIO for Vince Sean, the Lieutenant Sean from the Chino PD.
Right.
He's the PIO for our area, or Chuck Wynn, because I'm wondering, I got to observe one of their training things last year. It was an active shooter training that they staged at the high school on a weekend. And they do it as realistic as possible, similar to how you guys do like the wildfire training and things, where everything's done as realistic as possible. So they were full decked out in their bulletproof gear, helmet gear and all that good stuff. But they were shooting live ammo of paint pellets, and I'm wondering if maybe some of that is when they use some of that stuff, because they had a couple of volunteers as the perpetrators, as the criminals, and these guys were getting shot at with rounds, cool. Paint rounds. It was pretty neat to watch.
Can I volunteer next time? Because that sounds like a field trip.
No, it was, and actually a couple of the kids that are graduated now from the high school, a couple of the ball players that I've worked with over the years that are now in their, 20s, they were out there. They had a ball. Anyway,
that'd
off topic a little
riot.
Bit. So you both, like we've said at the outset, you're both facing similar challenges, similar obstacles, similar criticisms, but you both mentioned, yes, there are ways we can cut back. We'll take each of you separately. Scott,
What are some ways that you guys have taken your limited budget, worked in, gotten creative, and saved your districts? And I want to talk about the JMA a little bit. What you have done to stretch that dollar as much as you can and spend wisely.
I think one of the biggest things we did is the joint management agreement. It's created a lot of efficiencies as well as fiscal savings, both in the Chino Valley Fire District as well as the Central Yavapai Fire District. As a matter of fact, one of Central Yavapai's board members said, brought to our assistant chief of administration, hey, why isn't the chief's salary in the budget? Mm-hmm. And he said, because we don't pay him. Well, don't we need to show it in the budget? No, because we don't pay him. Chino pays him. In exchange, Chino gets to utilize the assistant chiefs from Central Yavapai Fire District, and we don't pay them.
And they're the ones that do all the work anyway, right?
So, yeah, I mean, I just sit back and point. You know, so those are some of the – that's some of the biggest things. Now, the other side of that, and this isn't necessarily a fiscal savings, it's definitely an efficiency, but we entered into an intergovernmental agency agreement with Central Yavapai Fire District to provide fire marshal coverage for Chino Valley Fire mm-hmm. District, because we could only afford a part-time. Central Yavapai needed a half-time person, and it's very hard to hire a half a person.
Right.
So we pooled our resources, and we hired a whole person. We're looking to do the same thing in January of 2016. On the fleet maintenance side at Central Yavapai Fire District, Chino Valley pays a per diem part-time engineer. He's a full-time engineer with us. He part-time does light-duty work on our trucks. And then we have people who come in and do SCBA, so forth and so on. Well, we spend enough in that category to pay for a half of a full-time mechanic. Central needs a half of a full-time mechanic. Mm-hmm. So in January, we're going to pull our resources. We're going to hire one full-time mechanic. The good thing is now Central Yavapai gets access to four full mechanics instead of three, and they need four. We get Chino Valley gets access to four full-time mechanics, which means, you know, we keep our trucks in service. We keep them up to date. And at the same time, that fleet facility doesn't just do fleet. They do fabrication. They handle the maintenance on self-contained breathing apparatus. They handle the maintenance on thermal imaging cameras. Those are some of the things. Now, one of the unfortunate decisions we had to make was laying off three full-time firefighter positions and a half-time front office person. It's, you know, it's unfortunate. Unlike a town, we don't have public works. We don't have a library. We can't cut back hours. We simply have public safety. That's our job. So anything we cut is going to, in some way, affect public safety and our ability to respond. And, you know, we're going to work through that, and we're looking at other options. We hope to have some recommendations to our respective boards by later this year, looking about September time frame on where we might be able to go to continue and take that next step between Chino Valley Fire District and Central Yavapai Fire District. We've cut at every corner we can find. We've looked at regional approaches to everything. We're pretty much at a point where there's not much left to cut except for closing an entire station, and we'd like to avoid that. But we're being proactive. We figure that challenge reveals the character of an organization, mm-hmm. and these financial challenges in the state and in the town, they are opening up dialogue that hadn't been there before about partnerships and regionalization. And I'm a man that believes that everything happens for a reason. Chris, I am here for a reason, and God didn't guide me here to shut a fire district down. So we're going to come through this.
And part of that proactive approach and interagency and communication, I mean, has brought you down to the state capitol a couple of times for some of the things. Touch on that a little bit, because some of that retirement issue and all that is also something that the town's facing with their PD and with their
SPR. Right. It's you know, it's twofold. We're looking at PSPRS reform in general statewide. We're also looking at it, and what I was testifying on was cleaning up language related to the hiring of fire chiefs and police chiefs. And if we're successful, and I think we will be, all indications are that we will be, that will help every community throughout the state of Arizona, not just fire districts, but police departments as well, because when Chief Wynn retires, Chris is going to have to look for a new police chief. Well, if it's not from internal, he's going to have to hire either someone from in-state that's still working, someone from in-state that's retired, or someone from out-of-state that wants to come and enjoy this wonderful community.
Yeah.
And if he hires in-state, not retired, he doesn't have a problem. If he hires in-state, somebody that's retired, or he hires from out-of-state, he has a significant fiscal impact on the town that he may not be fully aware of.
Right.
And we're talking large dollar amounts. Yeah. 28% of salaries plus 15% of salaries plus the potentially the cost of the employer contribution rates on top of that. So, you know, I feel that it's important in my position to be involved politically, to be involved at the state level, to help guide and educate our legislators. And it's not just ours, because I got to tell you, and I think Chris would agree, our legislators up here, they get it.
Yeah.
But we're a small part of the entire state of Arizona, and we represent the rural areas.
Yeah.
When you get into Maricopa County, they don't necessarily have the same issues, and they don't necessarily think about it.
It's a different animal.
Different breed.
And I'm not disparaging them.
No.
But I think that when you, again, it goes back to the dominoes, and thinking about what is this effect.
Yeah.
And it has a large effect.
Now, that brings up another question. Does this spark an interest for some, we joked about it earlier as far as digging into your past, but does this spark an interest for public office for you?
Only if Chris is going to be my chief of staff.
I would work for Scott.
It's interesting because a fire chief's lifespan in the position of fire chief is generally 5 to 7 years national average.
You had mentioned that to me before. Why is that? Is it because the time required to reach that level of expertise eats up a lot of your career, or is it just burnout?
It's not necessarily burnout. It's the same thing Chris is going through in politics. I'm a politically appointed position. If I upset the wrong people, then they get on the board of directors and they look for another fire chief. If the fire district is going in a direction that I'm not comfortable with, and I have exhausted every opportunity or possibility of me being able to direct the district in a direction that, as the professional hired to do so, then it's time for me to look for another position. Now, my hope is that I can make, I've been here just under 10 years, or 2 years. I'd like to try to make 12 more, which would, it puts me shy of where I'd like to retire, so I have to be honest. I'm always thinking about what's my plan B, because I love this area so much. I don't really want to move, but I wouldn't have an opportunity for another fire chief position. So what is plan B? Some have mentioned, well, run for public office. My God.
Run for or run from?
Yeah. That's I said run from. They said run for, but... you know, Chris said earlier, he got into public office because he wasn't happy with the direction things were going, and he wanted to make a difference. The reason I've promoted to every position I have in my career is because I wasn't happy with the direction things were going, and I thought I could make a difference.
Cool.
And I think, you know, I can't rule out the opportunity in the future because I'm not happy where this country's going right now.
Right.
And I think I can make a difference.
Hi. How cool.
You guys, another one?
I'm good.
No? I'm good.
I think we're all right for now. I'm going to throw the same question at you. We started this with Scott. Mm-hmm. What has the town done? What are some steps you've gone to stretch that budget dollar? Because there's been some good ones.
Oh, you
got
bet.
Some department heads really spending smart and cutting corners and utilizing their folks. What are some examples of that?
one of those we in purchasing the seal coat spreader, I can't think of the name of it right now. We don't use asphalt. We use chip seal, and in purchasing that chip seal machine, and then leasing, because you got to know what you can purchase and what you can lease. In this particular situation, by purchasing the chip seal machine, having our crews trained on it, and then renting or leasing the oil sprayer and all of that, we're going to be able to produce quite a bit more sealed surface roads than we could before, where we were hiring it to completely done on the outside.
Yeah, I talked with Michael Lopez the other day.
Yeah.
He's a new member of the Chino team, assistant public works director. Right. He was mentioned some of the projects that you're utilizing current town employees for, as opposed to contracting them out, in some cases, it's saving 50 cents on the dollar.
It's huge. That was a landmark decision, and it took place, if I remember rightly, about 3 months ago or so, three, 4 months back. We brought this to council. Our staff brought it to council. They said if we can designate certain projects in-house, it allows us, A, to bring in volunteer work. B, it allows us to accept donations from different, like at the skate park. If we do the skate park as an in-house, we can have donated concrete, we can have donated gravel, we can have donated rebar. Those kind of things you can't do as a government entity unless you have that in-house designation. And it's funny, it was fought against by some of the folks, you know, in some of our public officials. But to me, it just makes sense. Why can't we allow people to donate? Somebody, if Drake Cement wants to give the concrete for the skate park, why should we create more red tape? The designating a project in-house, like I told our vice mayor, I said, I'm not that good at concrete finishing. Matter of fact, I'm old and I'm fat, and I'm really I'm just not that good at that kind of work. But I can tie rebar, and I can tie a lot of rebar, and I can shovel concrete, but the finishing work I'd rather leave to the guys who are really good at it. It allows us as elected officials to step in with our hip boots on and get in and get dirty. How cool is that? To be able to show the community that we want to be a part of these things. Finance-wise, it's it helps us get closer to the private sector, and I can't mention, I don't think, our IT guy.
Mention whatever you want.
Whatever.
I don't care.
But anyway, I talked to our IT guy when he was talking about upgrading our town's computers. I said, can't you just go on eBay or something and buy a whole bunch of keyboards, a bunch of CPUs, a whole bunch of monitors? He said, Mayor, I wish I could. He said, I could do this for half the cost. But he said, because we have to go to three different bidders, we have to go through all the government hoops, and we have to sole source it. We can't just buy a keyboard from this outfit, a CPU from this outfit. He said the restrictions that are placed on us almost double the cost. And to me, that's insane. So when we can bring in something like making a project an in-house project, it's great.
So that comes into play with, and this is a whole other subject that we'll have to sit down. This won't be the only time we sit and do this.
I'm leaving town after.
But when you're dealing with public funds, with public monies, there's so many requirements, which can be a good thing because you want to make sure that people aren't abusing using the money. Accountability, exactly. But it also brings up where it costs more money to do stuff. It brings up things like Horseygate, our horse statues that are...
Sorry, dog. I knew you would bring up Horseygate.
Wait, Chris. I got to show you a picture. And I can't say who. I'm just saying there may have been an engine company that was coming back about 3 o'clock in the morning.
Uh-huh.
And there's some wonderful pictures of them riding Horseygate.
Thank you. I
know some guy that raises pumpkins around the corner. I'll send them to him.
I knew that Matt would bring up Horseygate. That has been the machinery for all that was moving as I stepped into office, and I got to see that one crash in real time.
It was moving like a bowel movement going through the town.
Yeah, it was like more fiber.
Just to recap, what it boiled down to is there was a fairly large amount of money that was coming out of the federal arts program for highway beautification. It was offered to the state, who in turn offered it to the town with some pretty strict requirements as to what it could be used for. Yeah. Couldn't use it to repave, couldn't use it to pay salaries, couldn't use it for this, couldn't use it for that. What was decided unanimously by council was to put some nice statues in the entryway to our town in a roundabout, their little traffic circle. And they're beautiful. They're gorgeous.
Oh, they are.
But
very nice.
The project started going sideways, upside down, roundabout. It went every which way and caused for some really interesting conversations at council meetings as to who would build them, who would approve them, who got to judge on the judging committee. It was Horseygate, it was interesting.
It was... A combination between Keystone Cops and Godzilla. It was amazing. Oh, the train wreck that took place over what should be a relatively simple process, but because it was federal money, we could not say, you know, so and so is a good artist. Let them do it. Yeah, everybody good with that. You can't do that.
No,
because it's a federal project and federally funded. You have to send it out to several bidders. You have to review their art. You have to actually. We actually, as a town, put together a committee of concerned citizens that looked at these various artists and
I'll stick my neck out because I thought this was a interesting and funny quote. A local artist came to complain that the money wasn't being spent locally.
Right.
Read into that, why aren't you giving it to me? And her argument was her credentials as an artist who has built things for cities all over the world. And I asked her, I said, well, which one are you? She goes, I did something for this town in Japan. Therefore, I'm qualified. I says, now, what if the Japanese artist argued what you're arguing right now? You wouldn't have got that commission. And she sat and thought for a second and just turned around and walked away. It's like, well, you know, you're dealing with government money. Mm-hmm. The government tells you how to spend it. Your hands are tied in a lot of ways.
I had volunteered to build 3 horses out of old water heaters, but nobody took me seriously.
I would love those. When I build a new house, would you build me a horsey out of water heaters?
I would gladly build you a Watergate horsey out of water heaters.
We got some of Scott's goals and plans coming up. Yeah, just right there is fine. Thanks. Chris, how long more you got in your term?
I have till December of 2016.
December 31st?
That I don't
know. January 1, 2017, you and I are going to have a much more free-form podcast going.
If I'm still in town.
Well, what do you want to get done between now and then? What are your goals as mayor?
I would like to have the town in the black. I would like to have at least one anchor industry in at Old Home Manor, if at all possible. I want our sewer and our water systems making money. That's huge to me. The sewer system has been a drain on the town's economy. Our water system has been, and I don't want to go dig up skeletons. It doesn't matter what was done before. What matters now is that we get these systems right side up and where they're making a profit. Yeah. And a big part of that second one, the water system, is going to be the purchase of Prescott's water customers. If we can do that, we can lower the bills for our Chino Valley citizens who buy water from Prescott. And if all goes well, I talked with our finance officer. He said by the end of this year, we should be in a position where we can start looking at possibly freezing our rate increases. That would be huge. To be able to do that, to provide some relief to the folks in the town, to allow them to keep their wells and their septic systems if they want them, that's a good thing. That's why I got into this office, was because of the oppressive laws that were about to be passed. I want people to be able to say, you know what? I've got a good septic system. I've got a good well. Mm-hmm. I'm a happy camper. Don't help me. And I'm okay with that. But if Joe Rancher dies and his kids want to sell his house off and the sewer line is run in front of his house, they can hook up to that sewer line and up the property value for X number of dollars. They need to be able to have that option. Okay, so yeah, in 25 words or less, I'd like to have the town solvent. I'd like to have some work here for our people so that they're not driving into Prescott and Prescott Valley to have to support their families. And if I can do that, I can walk out a happy man. So I'm going to go to work for Scott probably.
As his campaign manager.
Yeah.
Chief of Staff, campaign manager.
Yeah, we're going to work together.
I had a friend
Governor
of mine.
Governor Freitag.
Yeah. I had a friend of mine from Canada told me, he says, you must run against Monsieur Obama. And I said, oh, no, I will not do that.
Yeah. Well, guys, I don't want to monopolize your entire evening, but is there anything you want to hit that we haven't? Anything that you want to get out there that we haven't touched on?
I would just back Chris up. I think, from the fire department perspective, the purchase of the Prescott water system is vitally important as we continue to look at, decreased personnel in the agency.
Mm-hmm.
When we respond to an area that doesn't have fire hydrants or no guarantee of fire mm-hmm. suppression pressure, that is labor intensive. We need personnel. And without that water system, that's just going to make things a little bit worse, a little bit more challenging.
Mm-hmm.
But I would agree with Chris. I've heard a lot out in this area about public versus private. If you pour that concrete, by God, you're taking jobs away from private. These are the same folks who argue that the government is completely inefficient.
Mm-hmm.
I can't understand the hypocrisy. I really can't. But it is what it is, and I commend Chris for his efforts and the town's efforts. And I'll say that to that point, our guys at the fire department, to save costs, we couldn't get companies to bid on a small concrete mm-hmm. project to replace part of a ramp. They just completed that project in-house.
How cool.
The fire district money. It saved the taxpayers.
Yeah.
It's a quality job, and I certainly appreciate the work ethic of the people in this area. And again, I appreciate the opportunity to sit here with Chris tonight, get to know him a little bit better, and to sit here with you, Matt. So thank you.
No, I had
cool.
a ball, and
thank
I'm not.
You.
I gotta look this up because I should have done this beforehand. Normally, I do a little closeout, little pre-record or post-recorded little closeout. We're gonna bypass that now. We'll just wrap it up. I want to thank Scott Freitag of the Chino Valley Fire District, Central Yavapai Fire District, and I had to look it up. That's what I was looking at. What's your guys' ChinoAZFire.com,
right?
The website for all the info on the district, including their
their board meetings that they hold where they talk about everything going on within their mm-hmm. district, including budgets and contracts right. and all that right. good stuff. And there's also some great tabs on there for safety and fire prevention
yes.
Tips. There's mm-hmm. a children's page on there and some links. My son loves going on there. There's some yeah. little games and stuff. Central cool. Yavapai, what's their... What's
CentralYavapaiFire.org.
.org. Mm-hmm. Check them out. Look at all the things that they're doing to make sure their staff is well-trained to protect us. Because quite frankly, when I'm going up and down the highway or sitting in my home, I want to make sure that the best qualified folks are the ones coming to see me. Unfortunately, I know a lot of these guys, and if they see my name and address come on there, they just might drive a little slower coming to my house, thinking they might have to carry my big butt into an ambulance.
There you go.
Chris Marley, thanks for coming in. ChinoAZ.net.
That's correct.
One of the it's a newly remodeled, redesigned website. Check uh-huh. it out. There's some great information on there, some great links, including a link to the mayor's report. We didn't talk too much about that. You know what? Don't listen to me talk about it. Go on the website, click on the link, and you can see the entire library of his ongoing communication with the community in the mayor's reports, ranging from the very serious and in-depth items about our wastewater
right.
and things like that. And also, you'll get a glimpse into his personality and his sense of humor. So we thank you for that.
I like that.
Guys, thanks for coming in. I appreciate it. I want to thank you,
Matt.
Folks at Arturo's in Chino Valley.
All right.
They took care of us. It's a great little spot to come eat. They're going to be closing up here soon, moving a couple of blocks down the street. The grand opening there will be sometime in mid-June. I'll put a link up to their information, their hours, and contact information. It's a great spot, great staff. They took care of us, guys. Anything else?
Very nice. Thank you.
Thanks to Arturo's. They did a great job. And
Did I say the wrong?
No, you did great. And Scott, it was cool to get to hang out with you.
Mayor,
all right.
Oh, wait,
I forgot to push the record button. We got to do this all over again. You remember what you said?
Hey, we can
do
that.
Thanks, guys.
Cool.
Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up. Don't give up the fight.
Man, don't tell me heaven is under the earth. I know you don't know what life is really worth. It's a thought that Peter is told after story had never been told. So now you see the light. Hey, stand up for